Yeah, you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. It is now 8 p.m. exactly, and it is July the 22nd, 2009, and this is the Personal Computer Shoe.
And good evening. This is Joe King. Here in the studio with me tonight is Hank Key, my co-host. And from the skybox high above downtown Perkasie, PA, the dulcet and dancing melodies of Dr. Alfred Poor. Good evening, Alfred.
Good evening, gentlemen.
We're going to have an interesting show tonight. We have a special guest coming to us from deep in the heart of Venezuela, Dr. Richard Stillman.
Who is the
founder and head of the Free Software Foundation.
And he is in the forefront of GNU.
And, yes, they are the people who did GNU. You know, a lot of people say they use Linux, but really they're using GNU and a Linux kernel. We are not going to talk about that tonight, though. We're going to talk about literature. Literature. Hank, what do you have before we go to our guest?
While we're trying to get our guest on the air, I have one or two items to bring up before we connect with him. You know, last week I had said that Firefox 3.5 had a major JavaScript flaw, and because they wanted to speed it up so quickly that they introduced the flaw. But guess what? They fixed it right away, and if you download 3.5.1, it's fixed. So the good news is they had an immediate fix, and you can go back to that fast browser, and it is fast, Joe. I compared to all the other browsers I've used. The other piece of news is a very puzzling, Everex, E-V-E-R-E-X, they're the ones that used to sell the desktop units for $200 at Walmart. They are no longer marketing in the United States. They are, they're cutting back.
They're gone.
They still have a presence in the other parts of the world, but they cannot make it in the United States. So they're closing up all marketing.
Like I said, they're gone.
Yeah, but what happens to those who bought units?
They're here.
Well, I guess if it's more than, if it's past warranty, it really doesn't matter, right? Well, that's a sad part. And also, what's interesting is that Intel has announced that they have major, they made some major price slashes on their CPUs. And the reason is simple. That means that they have a new line of CPUs coming out. And instead of 45 nanometers, they're using 32 nanometer technology, and they're using that for manufacturing the fourth quarter of this year. And what's exciting about the 32 nanometers, it's more power efficient, not in terms of processing power, but in terms of how many watts it's used, so that it becomes a greener environment. And with the prices cut from 11% to 19% of almost across the board, we should see a price drop on the desktops and also selected laptops. By the way, you know what they have not cut their price on? The Atom processors.
I wonder why.
It's selling like hotcakes.
That's why.
And in a study that was done, they're saying that the number of netbooks, in other words, almost 90+% of them are with the Atom processor, is going to be actually higher than expected, than what was projected earlier this year. They expect now about 36 to 37 million units to be sold. That is a lot of units because it's eating into the standard laptop unit, and I think that the buying public don't realize that a netbook and a laptop are not the same thing.
Well, for who is it going to make a difference to that they're not the same?
Well, for those who are thinking that there's for most laptop people, and the optical reader is considered a standard item.
What do you mean an optical reader?
Hank,
read books?
No. Optical reader would be a DVD or CD reader.
Oh, okay.
Most people don't think about that until they need it.
Yeah, and then when they need it, then they say, where is it?
And that's why most people are... they did a survey of this, Alfred, and they found that a majority of the netbook purchases were unhappy with their purchase because it wasn't a notebook. But they didn't buy a notebook. And they're saying to the people who are interviewing them, I don't know what I bought. I bought a computer. Why doesn't it work?
Actually, in the survey that was done was that 70% of the people who did buy netbooks found them to be no problem for everyday use. It's the 30% that says it was under power because they had things beyond office work.
Let me give it to you. I am sitting here in front right now in front of an Acer Aspire 1, and it's every so often it pops up a message to me saying, Acer recommends you do a backup of the system. So I click on yes, and it says, we don't find a DVD burner. Well, no, you built the machine, Mr. Acer. You know it doesn't have a DVD burner. Why are you giving me a program that wants a DVD burner?
Well, that's because of the operating system that is set up that they put in. Okay?
No, it's the setup that they put in, and that's why customers are unhappy.
No, actually, I think that...
have you tried doing it incidentally with a USB drive in there?
Well, let me just say that I feel that it's somewhat of a bad rap that they caught underpower because if in order to have Windows sold on the unit, Microsoft has a restriction. Number one, you can't have more than 1 gig memory. And number two is...
No, certain versions of Windows.
Almost all versions. No,
not on mine.
No, wait. I said home, okay?
You didn't say home. Nowhere did you say home until just now.
Okay. If I bought something other than home, it would be very expensive for that unit.
No, it wouldn't be. The one I bought was $100, $200 more than the home version. But anyhow, go ahead.
That's a lot of money, $100, $200 more. If you know, most people are buying these netbooks in the $200 to $300 range.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Right? And what it is that the version of netbooks that Microsoft has the OEMs put in is limited to three concurrent tasks. Mm-hmm. So they actually throttle it, you know.
Sure.
So.
But again, you know, you and I we use our computers heavily for a lot of things.
My computer's too light to use heavily.
A lot of people are, you know, want to check email, they want to surf the web.
That's the majority, by the way.
That's pretty much what they want to do.
That's
netbook is perfect for that.
That's all I bought it for.
A netbook is ideal for that.
But I am unhappy that every
minutes
it pops up a thing telling me to put in my DVD. They know I don't have a DVD.
Yeah, you're always unhappy.
Listen, we have a guest tonight I want to introduce, and... I want to introduce Richard Stallman of the Free Software Foundation, which has been on the air with us in the past talking about GNU and free software. But tonight we're going to be talking about something different. Richard, are you there? Stevie, is our guest? Richard, are you there? Do you
sure
hear
he's
me?
There.
I hear you.
Good.
Here we go.
Here we go. Hank, Richard has been talking about some of the difficulties with the not with the Kindle as such, but with things that the Kindle causes in essence. Richard, why don't you tell us a little bit about your position on the Kindle?
Well, the reason I condemn the Amazon swindle, which is the only name I'm willing to call it, is that it's an attempt to take away the traditional freedoms of readers of books. Traditionally, we are free to do things such as borrow a book from the public library, lend it to a friend, sell it to a used bookstore, buy it anonymously by paying cash, which is the way I normally will buy a book, and to keep the book for as long as we like, and then read it as many times as we like, and we can even pass it on to our heirs, who can then read it and keep it and do all those other things with it. The swindle implements DRM, digital restrictions management. That is the malicious feature of refusing to let you do things. It's designed to restrict the user. Specifically, I'm not talking about bugs now. I'm talking about intentionally programmed restrictions. And DRM in general is an attack on the user, and you should never accept any product with DRM unless you have the means to break the DRM, unless you personally have access to those means.
Well, wait a minute, Richard, stop. You're not really suggesting that people should violate the Digital Millennium Copyright Act by breaking DRM, are you?
Of course. Of course I am. Unjust laws don't deserve to be obeyed. The DMCA, at least that part of the DMCA, is clearly unjust. It just shows the power of the copyright megacorporations over the U.S. Congress. I don't believe that laws that, that just because corporations pay money to Congress to get a law changes what's right or wrong.
Well, let me ask you, has this been constitutionally tested?
I don't know. Not that I ever heard of. But I'm not an expert on that. I couldn't tell you if there's any reason to expect the Supreme Court to reject the DMCA.
Well,
they don't seem to have been very inclined to be apply strict limits to copyright laws in other areas and other questions. So I would, if I had to guess, I would guess that they wouldn't care, but I really don't know.
Let me ask, is there anything about, let's skip the phrase Kindle as such and just talk about an e-book reader. Is there anything about the e-book reader concept that you're in favor of?
Well, I wouldn't mind an e-book reader if it didn't impose digital restrictions management.
All right.
Because the DRM is what attacks our freedom.
Exactly.
Just to read a book on a screen isn't necessarily bad. But if that's accompanied by DRM, it means we'll be a lot worse off. I mean, right now, if you visit your friend's house, you'll see a shelf of books, and you can look at them, and you could ask, could I borrow this one? But that'll be impossible if your friend's books are inside of an e-book reader with DRM.
Unless he's willing to give you his book reader.
His whole library he could lend you.
But
that's
a problem
a lot
with
to ask.
But that's a problem with Congress and not the product, though.
Well, it's a problem with both. And just because there's an unjust law that makes a certain thing legally possible, that doesn't mean that those who do it are excused of all blame for what they're doing. Amazon is totally responsible for what it's doing, and the U.S. Congress is responsible for the DMCA. There's a line of reasoning which says if what a company is doing is lawful, you can't blame it at all. I reject that line of political thinking completely.
I know that you're out of the country right now. You're down in Venezuela. But some news came out yesterday about Barnes & Noble entering the e-book fray with a very large, much larger library even than Amazon. But a great part of their library will be coming from the Google Library of Public Domain Books. And it will be not locked down to a single mechanical reader, but will be in a more open format. I think the PDF format, but I'm not sure about that.
Well, if they're really just PDFs and not PDFs encapsulated in DRM, I have nothing against that. I don't mind reading PDF files. There's free software to read PDF files. The secondary consequence of DRM is that the only software you can use to do the job that's not censored is proprietary software, and proprietary software is an injustice itself. But if these are really unencrypted PDFs that you can read with free software and read on any sort of computer, I don't have any criticism of that.
Does Adobe...
If your friend has one of those and you say, can I borrow it, he'll just make you a copy.
To the best of your knowledge, does the Adobe eBook Reader have DRM built into it?
I don't know.
Hank, do you happen to know?
I would expect it does, because I think, actually, isn't that what occasioned the arrest of Dmitry Sklyarov, the Russian computer scientist, when he visited the U.S. to give a talk at a conference?
I do recall his arrest, but I don't recall what occasioned it.
It was Adobe that had him arrested. And then Adobe turned around and said, oh, we didn't mean for him to be arrested, but they didn't pay his defense costs. You know, if you spilled soup on somebody's jacket and you said, oh, I didn't mean to do that, the next thing to do would be to make up for the harm you did. But Adobe didn't really want him to be freed. They just wanted to pretend they weren't to blame.
Well, what about the use of this unit outside the United States, because there are no such DRM laws?
Well, if somebody managed to break the DRM, whether outside the U.S., that would go a long way to solving the problem if people dare to use the free software that could then give them full unrestricted access to their own files.
Richard, is this your position or is this the official position of the Free Software Foundation?
The Free Software Foundation is against DRM because DRM mandates the use of non-free software.
Indeed.
And non-free software already tramples your freedom. Users deserve to have control of their computing.
And
users deserve to be free to share the software they use. And that means it's got to be free software.
It's interesting because this is a slight takeoff beyond that, but I'm sure it's something that concerns you as well. I listen to a great many audiobooks. That's one of the pleasures I have in life. And if I take an audiobook, if I download an audiobook from the library, it comes down in a format with DRM on it that precludes my using it on my iPod. I have to use it on a Windows-based listening machine.
Well, this is an example of the injustice of DRM.
In order to find a way around that, I had to go over to Germany, where a lovely company named Audials has come up with a program called TuneByte, which they claim does not violate the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, but it's an extra two or three steps for me to listen to the book.
Well, you know, I'm concerned with things that are more than just a couple of extra steps. There's more at stake here. I suspect that program is proprietary software from the way you described it.
Unfortunately, it is.
Well, that's not a solution. It doesn't enable people to live in freedom. But we had a protest outside the Boston Public Library because they are distributing files with DRM. They shouldn't do that. They should stop. The reason that this happens is because a company set out to use the public libraries, to turn them basically into its outlets. And the libraries went along with it. If they all said no, then they would end up distributing it without DRM. But because a lot of them said yes, essentially they lay down and
But didn't that also have Richard, didn't that also have something to do with the publishers who said they wanted some sort of control before they would allow
the publishers would probably give in. After all, the publishers sell lots of paper books that don't have DRM. And if a library said, we'll take the audiobooks on CDs, and that's it, they'd probably be available. I suppose probably some are available in that way.
Well, Richard, let me see if I can wrap this up and just ask a question, a very simple question, but probably very complex, is how can we go about changing the law?
Well, the first step is we have to build public disgust and denunciation for DRM, which means don't look at it in terms of how many steps do I have to go through to listen, and instead say, this was designed to attack my freedom, and I won't stand for it. I won't judge it purely in the shortest possible term. But instead I'll say, this is a trend, a systematic way of attacking my freedom, and it's going to get worse if I don't fight it. And then visit defectivebydesign.org and sign up and participate in our protests.
And you have
and
a
Richard, you
do have a protest going right now that you're organizing. And do you have a website that people can go to find out about this?
It's defectivebydesign.org.
Can you spell that out?
DEFECTIVE.
Oh, defective.
DEFIGN org. Do I win the spelling bee now?
You do, and I hope that Michael is listening because he will post that on our website as soon as he gets a chance.
By the way, I apologize for asking for the spelling bee because sometimes it's difficult to hear it over the air. That's why.
Yeah, it's surprisingly hard to spell it vocally, although to type it, of course, is totally easy.
Well, the thing is, we're going to put it on a website and direct people to it for those who have questions on it.
Well, thank you very much for bringing us up to date on the DRM situation. You did not use the phrase digital rights management when you referred to DRM. You used a different phrase.
Of course, because, well, you see, from the point of view of the people trying to impose it on us, they call it digital rights management. From our point of view, these are restrictions. So you choose one term or the other, and you choose your side.
Right. We've been calling it here on the air digitally restricted media, DRM.
That's a good term, too.
But we'll take yours as well. Thank you very much for joining us, Richard Solomon of the Free Software Foundation. Why do I have trouble saying Free Software Foundation? Because I don't get much free software. That's why. And, Richard, please join us again one day soon.
I'll be happy to.
We'll talk about this again. Have a pleasant trip back from Venezuela. Thank you for joining us. Good night.
Thank you.
And, folks, we do want to thank Richard Solomon of the Free Software Foundation for joining us, but Hank has a few news items he
can
cover.
Well, no, actually, I have...
He has a different story. I lied.
No. There is one major story that did come up, and it happened on Monday. Microsoft surprised the software world by submitting source code for the Linux kernel. In other words, and it turns out it's four pieces of code for virtualization. And I could see why they're doing it, and a lot of people are surprised by it. I'm not surprised why they're doing it. What Microsoft is saying when it comes to virtual machines and the standardization for so on, by submitting their code, they will set the standard. That's all they're doing.
That's all they're doing, but they're also saying that now the code that they have submitted won't make it easier for them to interface with everybody else's.
Yes. Now, we have a something that Joe and I batted about is that, gee, you know, when the listener says there's a bargain somewhere, well, we don't want to commercialize, but yet at
we
the same time.
Wait a minute. Let me be clear. This is non-commercial radio. Therefore, if we start talking about real prices, I had this out with a lawyer about 5 or 6 years ago. If we start talking about real prices, we're violating certain rules. So you'll often hear us say not $19.95, it's less than $20.
Well, we're circumspect about it.
We're careful. We don't want lawyers. At any rate, somebody wrote to us and said, listen, a lot of your listeners may be out of work or challenged with their budgets right now, and there's an awful lot of good computer books that a publisher named John Wiley publishes, and this summer Wiley is offering all of those books for 50% off. Now, Hank, I said to Hank, we really should announce that, and he said, well, I don't know. Is that a commercial?
Well, if it was 0% off, would you announce it? No.
No, I would.
10%?
Yes, probably. But 50% is a big bite.
Oh, okay.
And so if you can order your computer books from that are published by Wiley, you save 50%, and you get free UPS shipping. You just have to do one thing. You have to put in the promotion code EMP. That's Echo Michael Peter 15, EMP15, and you get the bargain. And if I'm violating the law, I'm sorry.
Well, you give away coupon codes for getting into trade shows free and things like that.
Yeah, well. Yeah.
There's a slippery slope.
I'm nervous about this.
The lines are fuzzy.
It is. Hey, by the way, Alfred, you forwarded a story to me, and I said, you know, I happen to agree with you. It's if you have a company... You sell the company, of course you make millions on it or whatever the amount is, and that company ends up in trouble and they owe a lot of money. They go into Chapter 11 and Chapter 7 and then they got a...
Well, no. Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And then you end up buying it back for pennies and use the same name because that happens to be your name.
Well, you very similar name.
Yeah. For the standard consumer, Ritz Camera is still Ritz Camera.
Right, and the point is though that after the auction, in buying it back, the owners get to thumb their nose at the creditors.
Right.
Well, you know, so, you use the word creditors, and right away everybody doesn't like creditors. And so
I like creditors.
But in this case, I'm a creditor because I sold them $15 worth of bananas for their lunch last week, and now they're not going to pay me? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, or you know, the camera company that you like, you know, fronted them with inventory and never got paid for it, or, you know, I mean...
And now we know why Kodachrome is no longer being made, because they didn't pay their Kodachrome bill.
Kodachrome.
No, Kodachrome.
It was Kodachrome that got canceled recently.
No.
Yes, Kodachrome.
Kodachrome was canceled?
Kodachrome was canceled.
Not Kodachrome.
I don't know about Kodachrome.
But guess what? The whole film industry is
Are you sure to check that? I think it was
No, Kodachrome. It is. I'm telling you. It's Kodachrome.
Listen,
I've been fooling around with photography for over 50, 60 years now, you know, and
it's the one Paul Simon sang about.
Huh?
What? The one that Paul Simon sang
about.
Yeah,
Kodachrome.
Kodachrome.
Sure? Yes.
Huh. Nice, bright colors.
Yeah.
So leaves of summer.
Oh, boy.
Makes all the world look a sunny day. Yay, yay.
It came out in 19...
Back me up, Stevie.
By the way, it came out in 1935.
Busy right now.
Okay, Kodachrome came out in 1935, and that was a very special year, right, Joe? 1935?
That was an excellent year. They
yes.
made good wine that year.
They made good wine, right. And then, by the way, I have to tell you, I got a piece of mail from the New York State Pension Fund. I was very surprised by it.
Because you are on a pension?
Yeah, but they also said that there is a scam going on, and that the
there was a scam.
Yeah, the New York State Attorney General's office is on it, and what's it? There's a outfit called TAGG, TAGGED.
Yes, I've gotten a lot of pictures requested,
and they said, yeah, there's someone that you want to connect with you, and but you have to sign into them to say I don't want it. But once you sign in with them, they got all your information, and guess what? They use it.
Well, it's not that they got all their information. What they did was they used the way you signed in to rape your information off your hard drive. And one of the things that they took was your phone book. And then they sent out, they took Hank's phone book and then sent out to everybody.
Oh, no. I didn't sign up.
I understand.
Because I realized what it was.
They would have taken Hank's phone book and then sent out an email to me saying, Hank wants you to look at his picture on Tagged. And then they would have gotten mine. At any rate, they went after him.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of people that are on Facebook, MySpace, and so on. How much of privacy do you really have once you sign into these services, Joe, Alfred?
I assume, I operate under the assumption that anything I post on a service like that is going to be publicly available.
And then if you go on YouTube, you do something silly, a prospective employer or client
I assume anything I do on the web is going to be public knowledge. I don't assume any privacy.
You know what the bigger question is? How easy is it to take it off?
It's interesting you should say that, Hank, because I got a letter from a mutual friend, yours and mine, a mutual friend about 3 years ago, saying, is there any way we could remove her husband's email address from a website that's in France where they posted a program that he put into a public domain because he had passed on about 8 years before and she keeps getting mail and it's kind of painful for her to have to write back each time that Steve is no longer with us. And I've got one site to pull it down, but they pointed out to me that there were another 15 or 20 sites because he had written a good piece of code and a lot of people had it.
Well, it's like the kid who was dying of cancer and please send a business card for his collection because he wants to collect 2,000 business cards before he dies. And it turns out that, you know, that letter, the email is still going around. He went into remission. He's over 30 years old. His family has had to move two or three times because the mail keeps following them, and it's just been a nightmare.
Anything you put on the internet never goes away.
Or you go to Cancun during spring break, and you go to one of these parties, and you get filmed, and it goes on to YouTube.
And incidentally, when you go on to Facebook and you put up pictures from friends and family, it can be enemies and non-family neighbors. I know several human resources people who immediately, when they get an application for employment, if they're interested in that person, they do a search to find out the dirt that that person posted on himself or herself. Be careful, folks. Listen, we're going to be taking calls tonight at 212. What is tonight, Stevie?
Wednesday, July 22nd.
Okay, we're going to be taking calls tonight at 212-209-2900. And Stevie will get you on the air real quick. But if you're listening on a podcast or you're downloading from the archives, and then you call in, you're liable to talk to Armin DeMille or somebody, and not us, because we're on tonight, right now. You're listening to us, and we'll be right back after this important announcement.
Bolivarian Solidarity Circle. We want to invite you to the Fiesta Bolivariana, an evening of solidarity with the Bolivarian Revolution, in support of the Food Sovereignty and Social Change Delegation departing to Venezuela this July. The Great Fiesta is this Thursday, July 23rd at 7 p.m. at Local 1199, 310 West 43rd Street between 8th and 9th Avenue. Come and learn more about the current situation in Venezuela with the participation of Council Member Charles Barron and the Venezuelan Consulate Carol Delgado. Also, live music from the Haitian group Tokai, Bomba en Plena from the amazing group Bomba Yo, featuring the comedy of the talented Chris Diaz, and music by the coolest DJ in town, DJ Melo G. Come and have a great time while supporting a good cause. For more info, call 347-251-6301. That's 347-251-6301.
Alrighty, that's great. Okay, this is WBAI New York 99.5 FM, also streaming on the web at WBAI.org. This is the Personal Computer Show here.
And we'll take it back, Stevie. This is Joe King, and Hank now has a few announcements for us. Incidentally, if you want Hank to make an announcement of your organization or your situation or whatever, you can send it to him at pcradioshow.org. If you go to our website and click on the email link, that will get it to us.
Yes, and when you do send me an information, give me the full information, date, time, place, title, organization, phone number, website, and, you know, don't give it to me in pieces, okay? And don't give it to me an hour before we go on the air because I won't get it. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey will be having a very unusual meeting tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. at the Scotch Plains Rescue Squad. And I have a soft spot for a topic like this is, how do you take all these broken down computers and what you really call scrap and build a computer from it?
Oh, that's easy. I give it to Hank.
No, seriously, they're going to try it. And so if you're interested in a subject like that, they'll be meeting at the Scotch Plains Rescue Squad. For more information, acgnj.org. And lastly, the New York PHP group will be having a presentation on flexing PHP with Flex Builder 4. That's next Tuesday, July 28th at 6:30 sharp. It'll be at the IBM building, 590 Madison Avenue, room 1219. You must RSVP, and the RSVP is nyphp.org/rsvp.php.
You know, Michael had a PHP problem this week. Maybe he wants to go to that one. I know it wasn't your problem, Michael, if you're listening, and I was just teasing, but it was a PHP problem. Panics at it. Okay, we're going to be taking calls, Stevie, so why don't we get the first caller on the air here at the Personal Computer Show. Maybe. Is Stevie awake?
Okay, well, first we've got David from Manhattan. Go ahead, David.
That's very mellifluous.
Hi there,
also.
David.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, David, how can we help you?
I have a question for both of you.
It's three of us.
Okay, for the two original hosts.
Okay.
There you go. Now, Viper. I wish Viper, when it indicates that it scanned seven cookies, will tell you what the seven cookies are, although it doesn't get rid of them, at least tell you what the seven cookies are, and it doesn't do that. And before you answer, Hank, House Call is turning into a downloading nightmare.
Downloading?
Yes.
It doesn't download. It runs it runs over the net.
Yeah, but they have various versions. And the one that I decided to...
They have two versions. One is using JavaScript and the other one is not. Okay? But that's it. There's only two versions.
They download a small, very small applet to your machine.
Right.
And they have an ActiveX version and a JavaScript version.
Right, that's it. So it's just two versions.
But it's a small.
Now, when you say nightmare, I think what you what's happening is that you're misinterpreting the fact that it can take a long time to run.
I've had a house call on one machine run for 12 hours before it completed.
No, it's the actual just getting the I've tried. What I think you're describing is what they offer as far as a free scan.
No, no, not at all.
So what am I, what site am I, is this Trend Micro?
Well, house calls from Trend Micro.
Yeah, house calls.
Exactly, exactly. So I did what you said, I thought it was peculiar in the way it didn't take up much space at all. You're right, it scanned from their site, exactly.
And it used the internet as the network itself.
Yeah, but that was
so fine. this way, if your operating system is infected, it doesn't affect the results.
I do want to point out that Michael has had some problems with HouseCall of pretty sizable. Incidentally,
I want to say
that HouseCall uses Java, not JavaScript, and only with Firefox. It's got the, are you using it with Internet Explorer or Firefox?
Internet Explorer.
All right. Well, then you shouldn't. Then it's an ActiveX situation, probably, and you shouldn't be having that problem.
So
Michael's had some serious problems where it hasn't run properly for him, and he's given up on HouseCall pretty much.
Yeah, I wish Hank. I wish it sounds fantastic. I wish I was able to use it.
There's a couple of others besides HouseCall that will do the same type of scan from their site. I believe McAfee has one, and I believe Kaspersky has one also.
Well, David, let me make a suggestion, okay? Why don't you try it with safe mode with network?
Okay, now I tried it in safe mode.
With network.
Okay, can I just let me really quickly tell you what happened. I tried to download it. When it gets to the last module, this is when I ordered it. I ordered the software. When it gets to the last module, I get the MS Blue Screen. For some reason, I get the MS Blue Screen, and it's just maddening.
All right. The only suggestion I have at this point is go through a registry cleaner, clean it up, and then try again.
That might be a valid suggestion. Good luck on it, Dave. David, let us know how it turns out. Stevie, it's time we have to get to our next caller. I will point out, though, while Kaspersky does have an online scan, it does not remove stuff. It just reports it to you. And ESET.com has an online scanner for malware that it finds. I'll be coming back at you folks with a review that Hank and I have been trying, a program called Super Malware... something.
Super
antivirus.
Right.
And it's
califragilistic.
No. Come on.
Gerald Jeske has recommended that one pretty highly, so I'm taking a look at it right now, and we'll get back at you with that one of these days. Stevie, who's next on the phone?
Okay, next we've got Hugh calling from Money Making Manhattan.
Hi there, Hugh.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Hugh.
Thanks for taking my call. First time caller. I'm a little embarrassed because you guys are operating at a pretty high level here compared to my question. I'm not particularly computer savvy, but I'm trying to help a friend of mine with her computer. She's significantly less savvy than I am, and her computer runs just incredibly slowly, unspeakably slowly. And I actually, like, even at startup, the little Windows jingle starts off very. I have a little soundbite here. If you have 9 seconds, I can play it for you. You can hear how her computer starts up. Maybe this will help you understand the situation, if I may.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, I get the
Hugh,
point, Hugh.
That's wonderful.
Right. John Cage once wrote a piece like that.
I want a copy of that file.
You've let me know how to get it to you, and I'm happy to send it. But I beg your pardon.
What operating system is she using?
It's Windows XP Media.
XP Media is XP Pro.
Okay.
And let me ask you.
How long has she had that machine running?
I think she got it a couple of years ago. She got it just when Vista was coming out.
When was the last time it was defragmented?
I tried that.
When was the last time you put a registry clean on it?
license. I don't know what that is.
Then you didn't do it.
I didn't
okay.
do that.
What else, Hank?
Well,
let's not give – what other questions before we give the answer?
Well, the other thing is how much of the capacity storage have you used up? Have you used up more than 80, 85%?
No, she's – I don't remember the numbers specifically, but she's got memory to burn.
Okay, because – not memory, storage, because it's not how much storage, it's the percentage of storage because
of the
paging.
In other words, if she has a 100-megabyte drive and she's got 50 megabytes.
I meant memory on the drive. Well,
okay, if she has a 100-megabyte drive and she has 50 megabytes free, that's fine. But if she has a 100-gigabyte drive and she has 1 gigabyte free, that's not fine.
When I right-clicked it and looked at the slice of the pie, it was very small.
Slice. Okay.
Good.
Hank is going to suggest that you do a defrag again, and that first you're going to do a registry cleaner, and you're going to do
Before you do any of those things.
Before you do,
back up first.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to suggest something different. I'm going to suggest that you back up everything that you want to save, because what I'm going to suggest is you're going to lose a lot of stuff. I'm going to suggest that you reinstall the operating system completely, not overwrite it, not do a repair, but reinstall it from your original factory disks.
Yep.
Because Windows has a bad habit on certain machines, and I have one such machine, that after a few years it slows down to a crawl.
Yeah, what I was going to say is that I happen to, in this case, probably agree with Joe in that you go through all the fixes, but the fixes would take longer than doing a operating system repair.
So the one caveat that I'll throw in here is that don't do this unless you're sure you have all the original disks for all the programs you want to run again.
Indeed.
Right. Yeah.
Because this will take – what I'm suggesting is not an overwrite to save everything in place and just do a basic repair. I'm talking about a reinstall. So all of your programs will have to be reinstalled. If you have Microsoft Office, you'll not only have to reinstall Microsoft Office, but all the thousands of patches you've put in,
yeah.
All of that stuff.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that makes me a little nervous about that is that it's an e-machine brand name, and I also have an earlier version of the same machine, and my brother-in-law, who's far more technologically savvy than I am, suggested that I do that right out of the box. He said, you haven't done anything to the computer yet, so just, reinstall it, because they put a bunch of junk on there when you first bought it.
Yeah. Let me ask you, do you have the recovery disk?
I do, yeah.
Okay.
But I did that on my machine, and at the end, maybe it was the audio driver. My machine had no audio after I had done that, after I had reinstalled.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to do all kinds of crazy machinations to get my audio to come back on, things that I would never be able to do for my friend.
Well, if it was a recovery disk, you should have had it, because the recovery disk basically is an image and not even the operating system. It's a complete image of what, with all the drivers on it.
Yeah, it should be, but some of these off-brands don't have all the drivers on there.
Before you do yourself an extra favor, and before you do any of this, and this will be my last word on it, go over to the eMachine site, put in the model number you have, download the drivers that they say you need for that model number, and have those available.
No. Go to Acer. Acer took over eMachine.
Oh, okay. I lost that one. Yeah.
In fact, when you go to Acer, it asks you, is it Gateway? Is it eMachine? Is it and so on?
Okay. And I'm sorry, Acer is ACA.
ACER.
Right.
ACER. And
by the way, let's get to that stage first and stay in touch with us, and we'll try to walk you through
it. Yeah. Once you get that far.
Give them our email address?
I don't.
No. I say, go ahead.
Okay, then you want to keep in touch with us by writing to pcradio@pcradioshow.org.
Okay, and a registry clean, is that something that...
No, skip the registry cleaner for now. We might write to you about that some other time.
By the way, I just want to add, is that there is no such thing as a stupid question. Just remember that.
And there's no such thing as a too basic question, because all of us at some point need the basic information. Stevie, who's next?
Next, we've got Bill calling from Manhattan as well.
Hi, Bill.
Everyone from Manhattan, huh?
Yes, I'm here. Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. I have a quick question. I'm having a computer problem, so I'm going to buy another computer with Windows XP.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to use the computer that's too old. And I have a legally purchased copy of Office XP. And I was told that this Windows... Genuine Advantage, when it sees me trying to install it, second time this Office XP is going to pick up a crook and disable my computer. Is it? I'm not stealing it. I paid for it. Will Microsoft do something to my computer because it'll see Office XP on a new machine?
Not true.
Not true.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, quick answer to a quick question. Let's go to our next caller. I like
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Okay. I like the easy answers of words of one syllable or less.
The only time is that they really got to it was in the Office 2007, where if you don't activate it in 30 days, you can no longer use the package. But all the others, if you don't register it, you can keep using it.
Right. Well, he's talking about installing it, not using
No, you can install it, but don't activate it. That's all. Right.
There you go.
And you don't need activation to keep it running.
No. Okay, Stevie.
Okay, we've got Tony from Manhattan.
All our callers are from Manhattan.
So far.
Do you have a special Manhattan button on your phone?
Hi there, Tony.
Yeah, 2-week-old Lenovo laptop nightmare. Had to reload the operating system using their one key thing 4 times so far. Total crashes, refusal to go into safe mode, and the Lenovo help, while enthusiastic, does not seem to be able to do very much of anything for me. And I asked them to send me a disk, you know, because these machines don't come with disks.
No. You're supposed to, maybe it's too late now, but you can go in there and it will recreate from the hidden partition and write out the stuff. And which model Lenovo is this?
I've got a Y530, and let me point out, let me stop you. The second time it happened, I installed Service Pack 2 immediately. Deleted as much of the programs as I could, uninstalled, and then immediately did a Lenovo backup.
Okay,
no. It never backed up.
Wait, let me ask a simple question. Does this unit have ThinkVantage?
No.
Okay.
This is an IdeaPad, not a ThinkPad.
Okay, because if it's a ThinkVantage,
it doesn't have that.
Yeah.
It has one key recovery. But anyway, no disk. I had requested the first time I called them that they send me a disk, and the third time I was speaking to the technician, they said, "Oh, we don't have any in inventory." I said, "Well, burn one for me, because I believe I have, a bad install."
You said this is 2 weeks old?
2 weeks old.
All right, so you're under warranty here.
Yes, I'm under warranty, but I'm also supposedly I have a 21-day return. I'm ready to.
I would call them up if I were you. And I would say I have a 21-day return and I have a 90-day warranty or whatever it is.
You are not going to wait 90 days. In other words, when you get to 18, 19 days, it goes back.
I bought this machine directly from Lenovo. It's got a one-year warranty.
Forget the one-year warranty. Yeah. Use the 21-day. Tell them either they give you satisfaction immediately
or you send it right back.
Or you want the RMA number to send it back right now on the phone. I don't want anything else.
Right.
You can't answer me. Please let me talk to your supervisor. Stay very, very, very ultra polite. Please let me talk to your supervisor who may be authorized to give me something that you can't yourself. I understand that. I've 2 days left on the 21 days, and either we resolve this right now on the phone or I want you to take it back.
Well, in other words, see, what I was thinking was, hey, if I can put a clean install on the machine.
No. You paid for something new. You're not satisfied.
Thank you.
I happen to like Lenovo. I like their machines. I like their service. I like the fact that you can do what I'm suggesting you can do.
Oh, you can do it because I've been bumping heads with these people.
Tony, don't waste your time. Just do it. Okay?
Just do it.
Okay.
Now, who do I do it through? Sales or through support?
Support.
Do it through support.
Yep.
They told me to do it through sales.
Then do it through sales.
Ask for the manager.
But when you get to sales, you want to talk to a supervisor.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay, Tony. Good luck on that. Stevie, who might have an easy question for us?
From Manhattan.
Well, we're going to go out to Long Island right now. We're talking to Tom from Merrick.
Tom, you're in Merrick, which is not far from where Stevie lives.
Right.
Stevie lives in Montauk.
Hi there, Tom.
In fact, I see Stevie every day. No, not really.
You see Stevie every day? Hey, now, wait a minute. Is this a personal friend of yours, Stevie?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. How can we help you, Tom?
We've become fast friends.
Yeah.
The quick thing is, Alfred, is he there?
Yes,
Alfred's
he's on.
Alfred's always here.
Awesome.
Even when he's not, he is.
Yes, his spirit is on. I wanted to ask a quick double question. The first is, I know 120 hertz on LCD TVs are all the rage, but any film-based concept looks really surreal and otherworldly on it to the point of distraction. Motion blur didn't bother me nearly as much as 120 hertz does.
Really? Okay.
To me, but, does 240 make it? And do you know what I mean when I say...
Yeah. Well, I don't see it. And it wasn't until 2 months ago that I've had a cinemaphile explain to me the problem. But there is... the way they described it was the 120 hertz. We're talking about high definition television here, and the standard refresh rate on a standard television is 60 frames per second, 60 times a second, 60 hertz. And to get rid of the motion blur that you sometimes get with LCD displays, not with plasma, but with LCD, they doubled the refresh rate. And what they do is they actually make up the missing frame between the two, and that helps kick the LCD molecules into place faster, and you get less blur. And the way it was described to me by the cinemaphile, it was that it looked too clean, that you didn't, it didn't look like a movie anymore. Is that what you said? How you put it?
It distracts me, but since you don't see it at 120, I'm not sure if anyone, or you've heard anyone say 240.
Well, the thing is, if you have that problem with 120,
it's going to be worse, right?
It's going to be a little worse because, the truth of it is, the 240 is, there are two kinds of 240. One's real and one's fake.
The
real 240.
One is and the other isn't.
Alfred, can you guys take this out to the behind
to the woodshed
barn and have a beer together?
Now let me just make one quick point.
To be totally humble about this, I don't think I'm the only one that's interested.
Oh, you're not. You're definitely not. But it all depends on where you're coming from, what you're used to looking at. The basic difference between 120 and 240, almost nobody will see the difference. Okay. So if you have a problem with 120, it's going to be the same. Or possibly worse with 240.
And after
most people.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I know most people won't see it. After this question, I'll hang up so you can move on. But I just wanted to ask a quick query, if you can. Why SD looks great on tubes and looks so horrible on
Oh, because tubes are lousy displays.
Okay.
They're
really good if you have the high.
I don't understand why
1080i, I mean, 1080p sets. Showed 720p so well, but they showed 480i so horribly.
We have spent enough time, I'm sorry to say, because we've got a bunch of callers who are waiting with some easier questions for us.
Email me if you have more questions on that, I'll be happy to talk to you about it.
PC Radio at PC Radio Show, Tom. PCRadioShow.org, Tom. Not PC Radio Show, Tom.org. Okay, let's go, Stevie, to our next caller.
Our next caller is Gary, calling from Dobbs Ferry. Go, Gary.
Is this the Gary that gave us the books?
How's it going?
Huh? Is this the same Gary?
I think so.
There's only one Gary in
Dobbs Ferry, and he's in Indiana.
No, he's the one that gave us the book deal. That they
got. Oh, the Wiley deal.
Yeah. Hi there, Gary. I haven't seen you in a long time.
You can see him? I thought this was radio.
No. I happen to know this Gary.
It's Radidio. Stevie, can we talk to Gary?
Yeah, he told me to get that Avast antivirus.
Yes. That's one of them, yeah.
And I tried, I downloaded it and tried to launch the program, and I'm getting a terror message.
A what message?
A terror message. It says that the antivirus pro.exe file is linked to missing export WS2_32.dll.
Well, it's either a bad download or a bad install. And
what I would do at this point is I would use add remove in your control panel, add remove programs, to remove it. I would erase it, and I would erase the download file from your download directory, and then go back and try it from scratch.
Wait, and download the file. In other words, don't do a run. Do a save, and
now
then,
after
you get the save, go into safe mode to install.
Install in safe mode. All right.
Safe mode without the network.
Okay, that should work for you, Gary. It has worked for me. Stevie, one last caller tonight.
Ooh, one last caller. Okay, let's go to Sandra calling from the Independent People's Republic of Brooklyn.
Sandra.
Yes.
Our first Brooklyn call tonight.
Thank you.
Hey, how can we help you?
I'm looking to purchase a new computer. I have a really old Dell laptop,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sick of it. And then I have a 2005 Dell
mm-hmm.
that's sitting in a box that died. I'm fighting with Dell to return this thing. I'm almost about to run on my 3-year warranty, and I don't want to purchase another Dell.
Okay, and what's the question?
I'm interested in a Mac, and I'm totally, like, really a novice. We are starting up a construction, sort of a general contracting company, and there's a lot of graphics and drawings and plans, and
mm-hmm.
Trying to price a Mac, and they seem to start at about, like, $2,200, but to get something that's comparable that will happen.
No. If you want a Mac, you got to buy a Mac. It's got whatever the price is. I have a suggestion. Go to TechServe. And
on 23rd Street.
And they can help you by actually you describe what you need, and they'll tell you which Mac will fit. But they're the only game in town. I don't mean TechServe. I mean a Mac is a Mac is going to be the same price.
No, all the places, whether you go to the Apple Store, and TechServe is great, and the Apple Stores have a thing called the Expert Bar or something like that where
mm-hmm.
they give you free advice. They're good, but understand what Hank was saying is that Macs sell for a price. It's not a price competition like you'll find in the Windows world.
Mm-hmm.
The prices are all fixed and controlled, and yes, they are kind of pricey, but
mm-hmm.
you're getting top quality stuff. So if you look, I'm not really sure that they're pricey if you compare it to a Windows machine that was built with the same quality goods inside it. But,
okay.
But you are going to spend, much more money. You can go out and you can get a Windows machine for probably
Sandra,
half.
Just remember, whatever applications that you might have spent for on a Windows machine, you're going to have to go repeat at the purchase for a Mac.
This is
right.
True, because you're buying it just as a hardware. Feel free to give us a call or follow up or to send us email at pcradio@pcradioshow.org. Remind us that you are on the air, and we'll try and answer more quickly. For the rest
Thank
of
you.
You, if you write in to us, Gold Card members get answers first. Everybody gets an answer eventually. This is Joe King. I want to thank you all for listening. Hank Key and Alfred Poor will be joining Stevie and me again next week, I think. And until then, we'll be hearing various noises coming out from Stevie's board.
Mm-hmm. And that effectively concludes the personal computer show here at WBAI New York 99.5, also streaming on the web at WBAI.org, and pick up the stream at the PCRadioShow.org. All right, have a good evening out there in Radidio Land, like Joe said, and listen to this.
Women, we are held back on the job, in the classroom, in public life, and in the home.